stickers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. You are going to have to wait till the third hour of the program tonight to catch the fun and frivolity when I strip the bark off of John Kyle, the junior senator from Arizona. And I swear to you, it's going to be brutal. Eh? The first hour tonight is sponsored by George. Oh, never mind! Well, we have an hour two sponsor and an hour three sponsor, but no hour one. I see. Okay. Read the copy before you start talking, Mike. That always helps. We have a guest tonight. As you know, I don't I don't do very many guests at all, but I've asked this guy to be on, and I'm going to bring him on in just a moment. The Medal of Freedom winners for 2010 were announced by the Obama administration today. There are 15 of them, and they will be given the award at a dinner, I think, in 2011. 15 recipients. That's, by the way, the Medal of Freedom is the highest. That's like the old Soviet hero of the Soviet Republic, and it has about the same effect. Medal of Freedom is America's highest civilian honor. And this year, the list included German Chancellor Angela Merkel, American poet Maya Angelou, and former U.S. President George Herbert Walker Bush. I got a frantic email from somebody tonight, Kathy. He said, oh, my God! Georgia! What? No, 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 no. It's almost as bad, but not quite. George Herbert Walker. According to the White House announcement, the Medal of Freedom goes to, quote, individuals who have made especially meritorious contributions to the security or national interest of the United States, to world peace, or to cultural or other significant public or private endeavors, end quote. George Herbert Walker Bush, who is responsible for the slaughter of 300,000 Central Americans during the bad old days of Reagan Bush, and then Bush Quayle. Death, destruction, entire villages wiped out in El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua. Murder, blood, gore, destruction, scorched earth policies. And now this murderous bastard is going to be awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. We live in an astonishing country, don't we? I won't bug you with the other 12 recipients, but you can rest assured there are people who, without argument, probably deserve the Medal of Freedom. But George Herbert Walker Bush, whose father, and of course we don't visit the sins of the fathers upon the children, do we? Whose father, Prescott Bush, was a direct contributor to the rise of Nazism through the banking business in the state of New York in the 30s. We live in astonishing times. David Bender is the co-host of Ring of Fire. Included in that group are Mike Papantonio and Robert Kennedy Jr. And Bender is extremely astute as a political observer and commentator. And we've asked him to be on the program tonight to talk about a couple of things. Hey, David.
Hey, Mike.
How are you? You are in Trinidad? Oh, that's Trinidad,
California. I'm in Trinidad, not Trinidad and Tobago.
Trinidad, California.
Trinidad, California. So I'm on the other side of the country. And it is. These are astonishing.
Oh, my God.
George Herbert Walker Bush can receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
I can't understand What happens, David, in this selection process? I don't know who makes these selections or how they're recommended to the president, but this is just, I don't know. I'm kind of nonplussed about it, so I'll just drop it.
I don't blame you, and it speaks to what this White House has been doing consistently, trying to show its bipartisanship. John Lewis, one of the names. Other names of those
on that list, yeah.
John Lewis, who is a genuine American hero.
He is.
A civil rights activist, someone I admire greatly, is on that list. Mm-hmm. But somehow on the same list as George Herbert Walker Bush, the whole thing then is, I think accurately, it can be said tainted.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just unbelievable what the Obama administration attempts to do. When is somebody going to tell the president that reaching across the aisle to these Republican thugs is not only a waste of time, but has utterly and absolutely destroyed those of us who used to be in the Democratic Party base and now have more or less given up and said, okay, there's not a whole lot we can do. The only good that came out of these midterm elections, David, is so many Blue Dog Democrats are no longer in Congress. Now they've been replaced by Republicans, but what the hell is the difference?
It's actually an improvement.
Yeah, well,
because if you're trying to, and it's what the Republicans figured out years ago, Mike, that if you're going, and it's why they are purging even more from their own party. They almost took out Lisa Murkowski,
mm-hmm.
who's out there declaring victory right now, even as we speak, from
right.
the people who tried to purge her for being. When Lisa Murkowski is a moderate, you know what the Republicans are about. Democrats need to do the same exact thing in their party.
Yeah.
The Blue Dogs have no business being there.
No, and that's why I say, even though we're going to have 2 years of hell here, it's just we'll have to wait and see. You know, the fact remains that what's left of the Democratic Party does still control the White House and the Senate, which doesn't say much about anything, except it's not in the hands of Republicans. But I'm hoping that real Democrats, people who subscribe to the old Democratic Party ideals, are going to emerge and let this president know and let the ruling clique in the Democratic Party understand either this party is returning to its roots or it's going to disappear, and this leap to fascism will just happen that much quicker. So, whatever.
Well, you know, when you said at the beginning of the hour that this hour was sponsored by George, who started to say, I was hoping it was George Soros.
Yeah, well, wouldn't that be nice?
Wouldn't that be nice? But I got to tell you something, Mike, because I just read this just before coming on with you, is that George Soros apparently told the annual gathering of the big progressive funders, the Democracy Alliance, which is in Washington, D.C. right now. And this is a great quote. George Soros has been attacked by Glenn Beck and the folks at Fox who've been going after him tooth and nail because they know he's a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
This is his quote. I'm used to fighting losing battles, but I don't like to lose without fighting.
Mm.
That's George Soros. And he goes on to say, we've just lost this election, but we need to draw a line. And if this president can't do what we need, it's time to start looking somewhere else.
Boy, is that the truth? If ever the Democratic Party, if this two-party system is going to survive, and a lot of people, myself included, can make the argument that its usefulness is no longer functioning, it's on life support, we've kind of devolved to a one-party system. It's just the lesser of two evils and the greater of two evils, and that's it. So if the two-party system is going to survive, the Democrats had better get their ass in gear and figure out who they really were and who they have to be. David, hold on a second. We got to do some commercials and a break here. We'll come back and talk some more, okay? We're talking with David Bender, who is the co-host of Ring of Fire. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Too many people, we get too many. right. From the left, it's more Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. And we're talking with David Bender, who is co-host of Ring of Fire with Mike Papantonio. Excuse me. I forget where we were, David. I'm sorry. I guess we weren't anywhere. We're just a couple of white guys.
We were anywhere and everywhere. We're talking about the two-party system. Although I have to say, just hearing the music that brought us back in, I'm heartened to note that in his waning days as governor of Florida, Charlie Crist is about to pardon Jim Morrison.
Really?
For indecent exposure in 1969. Isn't it good that government still works?
Oh, Jesus, God. I
feel great about that, Mike. I really do.
Yeah, that's just a real soul stirrer. I swear to God. I was living in Tampa in 1969 when the concert in Miami occurred. I think it was in Miami where he dropped his drawers, and that gave rise to something. I think it was called Concerts for Decency or something.
Did you just say gave rise?
Yeah, I did, didn't I?
You did, didn't you?
Oh my! Well, it's after 6 o'clock here in the East. So, you know.
But, concerts for decency?
Yeah, concerts for decency or concerts for purity or something. There was some religious right organization, even back then, David, I realize that was before you were born, but even back then, in 1969, some religious right organization put together these concerts, and it was like Up With People kind of, there I did it again, Up With People kind of concerts where the stadiums would be packed with all these freshly scrubbed, mostly white kids who would listen to the new musical genre that was coming out then, Christian rock. Oh, those were the days.
Well,
David.
That's the home of Anita Bryant.
Yes. Well, that's where she raised a lot of hell, didn't she? The orange juice spokesman.
Well, if 1969 was Jim Morrison exposing himself, it was Anita Bryant, and would that I were too young to remember this. Anita Bryant, who comes out of there singing to the rest of the country about morality in the 70s. You know, and leading a crusade across the nation.
Yeah, it was really something. If you really want to know the craziness in Florida, read anything that Carl Hyacin has written, you know, the columnist for the Miami Herald. All the books he's written are just stunning. He nails it. I've lived in Florida three times, and I will open all the veins in my body before I would ever move back there again. Hey, another reason I wanted to have you on tonight, I've been talking about this cruise that is being put together, and apparently you're one of the organizers doing your damnedest to get this thing launched.
Well, I am, and it's grown out of something that we did back in the Air America days initially, and then even post-Air America. What happened was that a lot of people wanted to get together to talk in a setting where they could actually have real time, not just, you know, sort of go for a couple of hours and then drift apart. And it turns out, the Nation magazine's been doing this for years, Mike. And what grew out of this was something called the Progressive Voices Cruise. You've been talking about it. And what's astonishing is these people begin to talk about issues, talk about things in their communities, and then leave this cruise, going off and actually continuing to work together, even when they're not on the water. It's been an amazing process. These bonds form, relationships, and this is really what activism is about. When you can go in a setting where it's not just, you know, work, but it is a chance to get to know people outside of your own context, and that's extraordinary. I'd never been on the water in something like that until I did one of these, and it's really amazing. But the news I bring tonight, and this is really something I'm excited about, because I have wanted to go up to him. I've talked to him on the phone. I've interviewed him, but I have never met Congressman Alan Grayson, who has been a hero to me in this last 2 years. And we're talking about the people who won't stand up and speak truth to power. He was one of the few who did it. And he is joining us, you and me and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Mike Papantonio and Mike Farrell, all of us. Now Congressman Alan Grayson will be with us in February on this cruise, and I'm very excited about it.
That's good news. I'd heard rumors to this. I'm glad to hear about this. I'm glad to hear you verify it. Just for the people who don't, we got a break coming. Can you stick around for a few more minutes?
Absolutely.
All right, for the people, for the folks who don't who don't know all the details, and we have it all up at our website. All you have to do is go to MikeMalloy.com or just about anybody on the progressive end of your radio dial. I think Stephanie has it up. I think Hartman has it up. But just go to MikeMalloy.com, and you'll find the information about this jaunt we're going to take. What is it, Kathy? February 6th, I believe. February 5th. When we come back, we're going to get just a few more details from David Bender about how much time is left to register, where we're going to go, and so on and so forth, and the fact that we are going to have a contingent of Canadian Marines who will surround the ship, so that, you know, all these liberal progressives together on one boat, on das Boot, it might be a little bit, you know, spooky. But we're going to have Canadian Marines who will be outriggering this huge cruise ship to make sure that nothing untoward I'm kidding. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, we're talking to David Bender, who is the host of Ring of Fire. The if you're not familiar with that program, hosted by David and Mike Papantonio, you need to listen to it.
And Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Yeah, and right, RFK Jr. Where, now that Air America's gone, where are you guys, where can people around the country hear the program?
Well, the best way is to go to the website ringoffireradio.com, ringoffireradio.com, and that will take you to all the stations that stream us. We're pretty much in, and what's been great about it, Mike, is that after Air America, we actually added more stations.
Isn't that amazing?
We're able to keep most of the ones that we had been on, and then added a bunch more. So it's been really encouraging.
That's great. Now back to this trip that's planned for February 5th. It's going to the Eastern Caribbean. You've got a pretty impressive list of people who are going to be on this trip, giving talks and speeches.
It's a pretty great group, and. You've mentioned my co-hosts, Robert F. Kennedy, Mike Papantonio, you and Kathy, which we're very excited about. This is your first one of these, right?
No, I did one by myself to the Mexican Riviera about 3 years ago when I was working for Nova M Radio. And it was great. It was a week trip. We flew to San Diego and then took one of these huge, I'd never done it before. But it was, I had a kind of a smart-assy attitude about it. I said to Kathy, oh, my God, a cruise? What's next? I'm going to be playing shuffleboard. It didn't turn out that way at all.
Not that way at all.
It was fantastic.
And I had the same thing. I'd never been on until we did one of these, and it was to Mexico. Rachel Maddow and a whole great group of people. And, in fact, it's everything you don't anticipate.
It is. That's
what's
the truth.
So fun about it. Let me add, people like Mike Farrell, who is a tremendous activist that most people know him from the TV series MASH, but Mike and his wife, the actress Shelley Favre, are going to be on, and they're terrific people, and this will be a lot of fun. I think it's the first one of these that Mike will have done. Hal Sparks, the actor and comedian and now radio host, actually, and activist, is coming on, and he is just tremendous.
He's with Stephanie Miller.
Gary Harrison, who's a radio host out of Pacifica in Los Angeles.
Right.
Also a tremendously funny and interesting guy. He'll be on board. And, of course, as we mentioned, the congressman with guts, Alan Grayson, who, you know, it's kind of interesting. We talked about, you know, where progressives are going to go in 2011 and 2012 if this White House and this Congress don't lead. I'd look to Alan Grayson for the kind of direction of people who are really going to stand up and say, this is what we need to be doing, and drawing a line in the sand. And we can draw that line in the sand in Grand Turk, San Juan, St. Thomas, and a beautiful island called Half Moon Cay. So these are the stops. The ship leaves out of Fort Lauderdale on the 5th of February, winds up back there on the 12th, but it's a week in Puerto Rico and the Bahamas, and the Holland America Eurodam is the ship, and it is a floating hotel. It's an amazing ship.
What? How long do people have to register for this? I know there are deadlines.
Well, the deadline is, you know, in principle all the way up until, you know, just before we leave. But in fact, registering this week through Friday is a guarantee of a cabin, because they have been going very quickly, and we have reserved a finite number. What has to happen past Friday is we've got to give those, you know, that remaining amount can go up for grabs. So we're holding on for our group right now, and that's why through Friday we're really pushing to make sure that we get our group together and have everyone together on the ship.
And people can go to various websites. I know they can go to my website.
Best place to go is to MikeMalloy.com.
And just
because they can click on right through, and it'll take them to the website to sign up. But I want truth seekers to seek this out as a group. And that's one of the things. I'm not kidding, Mike. That when people come together, people who have heard us on the radio get to come together and interact. It is really a process. Unlike, because this is, even when we take calls, it is a one-way street. But the chance really to interact with folks and have a dialogue that is just not, you know, very finite. Sorry, we got a break for a commercial. That's what this process is about, and people really come away feeling invigorated and inspired by it. Actually, there's no other word. That's every time I've been a part of this, that's what how people react to it. It's really tremendous.
Well, the trip that we took it was strictly a truth seekers cruise. It was one that we put together ourselves. We had 75 people on this trip. And it was just a nonstop hoot. I mean, we really, really did have a good time. So the more we sit here and talk about it, the more this is starting to sound like an infomercial. But the fact is, we would like to get a lot of truth seekers, a lot of people listen to this program, to take part in this. Kathy and I are minor stars on this trip. We have...
I would love it, and I got to ask you, because I am putting together the program, and let me ask you right now. I hope we can do a panel that you will moderate, if the word moderate and you can be used in the same sense.
Probably
that
not.
That will be about the Bush crime family.
Okay, yeah.
Because I got to tell you something.
Sign me up.
When I see Jeb Bush starting to put himself out there for the future, we got to be talking about this.
God, I just got a shiver. My grandmother used to say, when you get a shiver for no apparent reason, it means somebody just walked over the site of your grave. That's what a shiver is all about. You know, unless you're cold. I'm not cold here in the studio. So the fact that you mentioned Jeb Bush, I just get that shiver. All right, so go to MikeMalloy.com, find the little advertisement there about this cruise, click on the cruise, click on through, follow the instructions, and we hope to see you there. I know David has mentioned the list of people are going to be there, and we're looking forward to it. So the ideal thing is to do it by this Friday. That's tomorrow on Friday.
That's right. Today's Wednesday, by Friday, indeed.
Yeah, okay. Sounds great. All right, David, I'm looking forward to it, to hang out with you guys and to hang out with the people who are going to come on this trip. We should have. By the way, do you play shuffleboard?
I don't, but I'm prepared to learn.
I'm just kidding. I hope we can get a couple of poker games together.
There's poker, and as a matter of fact, let me tell people, there are slot machines. You go outside and see my limit, all bets are on.
Okay, sounds good. There will be Bible classes, I hope.
And I'm not teaching them.
All right, David Bender, thank you so much.
All the best, Mike, and to Kathy as well.
All right, take care. Take care. Good talking to you, David. Take care. David Bender is the co-host of Ring of Fire with Mike Papantonio and Robert Kennedy Jr. Listen to the program. Go to ringoffireradio.com. And is it Ring of Fire Radio or ringoffireprogram.com? I don't know. You'll figure it out. I hope you're going to come on this. If you're listening right now, I hope you are. This is going to be fun. The a group of House Democrats has released a letter that the group of Democrats sent to incoming Republican congressional leaders, calling on them to announce which of their members in the Republican caucus will be foregoing their congressional health benefit insurance, or their congressional benefit health insurance, which is subsidized by the government, in light of the Republicans' opposition to health care reform overhaul legislation. The letter says in part, it's written by four Democrats. They write in the letter, which is addressed to Mitch McConnell and John Boehner. The letter says in part, quote, "If your conference wants to deny millions of Americans affordable health care, your members should walk that walk. You cannot enroll in the very kind of coverage that you want for yourselves and turn around and deny it to Americans who don't happen to be members of Congress." End quote. According to the letter, the federal government pays more than $10,000 of the premiums of each member of Congress who has a family policy under the most selected plan, the one that most of these guys pick. The federal government pays more than $10,000 of the premiums. That means you and I are paying for these rat bastards, right? The very people who said no to us demand that you say yes to them. How about that? The signatories on the letter are four lawmakers: Joe Crowley of New York, Linda Sanchez of California, Donna Edwards of Maryland, and Tim Ryan of Ohio. They sent a separate letter to other Democratic colleagues asking them to sign on to the effort. The Democrats say they were spurred to press Republicans to announce their position by news that Andy Harris, a conservative incoming Republican House freshman, has complained. We talked about that. When did we talk about this? He said that he would not receive his government-subsidized health care coverage until February 1st, a month after he was sworn into office. Remember we talked about this rat bastard, right? So I think this is great. Let's see how many Republicans respond to the letter and how many of them say, well, you know, we just got here and already they're trying to play politics, right? You greasy bastards. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. For the hour, you know, I hate to see stories like this. Something has happened in Arizona. You've got this war criminal who likes to call himself a war hero, or other people do, John McCain, and now you have this psycho John Kyle, who we are going to really take apart screw by screw in the third hour of this program tonight. You've got a governor there who's out of her mind, open season on people who are of a certain skin tone. And now if you happen to be sick and poor in Arizona, among the 98 people in that state who are awaiting state-funded organ transplants, you've just been handed a death sentence. This morning, NPR reported on cuts to the Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System. That's the statewide health care provider for poor and disabled people. The system said it would pay for organ transplant procedures, then went back and reversed itself, citing risk evidence that critics say was tailored to give them cover for this unthinkable action. Matt Renner, writing at Truth Out, an op-ed there, writes, instead of trying to save the lives of these people who had been told they had a chance to spend a few more years with their families, the Arizona legislature has chosen to take away their hope in order to save an estimated $4.5 million. Now, can you imagine if somebody told Dick Cheney, sorry, pal? Of course, Dick Cheney has enough graft and corruption money stashed away someplace to provide all the hearts he is going to need. The state of Arizona, facing a $1.5 billion budget deficit, has decided to make poor people pay with their lives instead of making rich people pay with their treasure. Now, this didn't have to happen. In a special election in January 2010, the people of Oregon, a state with a comparable average income as Arizona, decided to raise taxes on the wealthy and on corporations instead of cutting essential services, despite an all-out effort to convince voters that taxing the rich would hurt the poor. Oh, yeah, of course. Voters approved in Oregon measures 66 and 67, which raised tax rates on those most able to pay and allocated the money to preserve state services. Huh? The economy in this country for the past decade or more has been built on lies. We all know that. Super fueled by greed and so-called innovation in the financial sector, it finally careened off the road and slammed head-on into the cement wall of reality instead of taxing people who caused and profited from this situation. Our political system has bailed them out, buried their crimes, and passed the costs on to the most vulnerable. People like the 98 poor men and women who were told their lives might be saved only to have that hope now taken away. The right wing is full of lies and excuses about the economic logic of cutting government programs, but what they will not tell you is that some of these programs are literally the only hope for people at the bottom of the economy. By standing in the way of economic justice, conservative politicians make their fantasies of brutal health care rationing and death panels come true. These sons of bitches. So in Arizona, 98 families may be forced to watch a loved one die slowly. And as Matt Renner says, the rest of us must take a moment to accept responsibility for allowing this to happen and ask ourselves what we can do about it. Instead of hoping for a good-hearted philanthropist to break off some crumbs to pay for these surgeries, we've got to reclaim our power to force society and government, no matter where. Well, I don't live in Arizona. That's not the point. To force society and government to take care of the least among us. Sounds like socialism, doesn't it? How'd you like to be one of those family members? How'd you like to be one of those patients? Remember when Dick Cheney, in one of his more rabid moments, insisted that the people being held at Guantanamo were the worst of the worst, the dead-enders, the dregs of international society, and by implication, anything done to those people by the CIA, by the torture squads who used to send down there, and by Dick Cheney, who used to go down to watch. Remember how we were told that they deserve no mercy because these are the people who are trying to kill Americans? Why? I'll get to this in a second. I'm just getting. This story has got me just absolutely wired. But you do remember that. Over and over, Dick Cheney made that very clear, as did his puppet, George Bush, as did a lot of people in this corrupt, filthy Bush-Cheney crime syndicate. The worst of the worst. You remember, right? Didn't make any difference if they were 15-year-old boys or taxi cab drivers or fruit vendors who were scooped up by people who didn't like them and sold off to the CIA in Afghanistan or Pakistan or wherever they were scooped up. They were sent to torture facilities. Some of them were murdered by our people. Some of them were beaten to the point where they could hardly stand up. Others were subjected to controlled drowning. Others were psychologically terrorized. And now they're being put on trial. Well, we have a verdict in one of the trials, as reported by CBS News. Ahmed Gailani, who has been held or was held at Guantanamo for about 7 years, 6 years, subjected to the kinds of torture that only a beast like Dick Cheney could enjoy watching. I have the verdict for you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Seven past the hour. So, Dick Cheney used to call the people who were being held with no legal protections whatsoever, in violation of just about every agreement, international agreement on human rights that this country has ever signed, in violation of our own Constitution, in violation of simple principles of fairness, justice, humanity, ethical conduct, morality, didn't make any difference. This was to be Guantanamo, and the rendition program was a huge experiment. Let's see what we can get away with. Let's see what we can let's try these torture methods. Let's see how far we can go. This is what the Cheney Bush crime family did. One of those who was held, Ahmed Gailani, he's the first Guantanamo detainee to face a civilian trial, was acquitted today. He was acquitted of most charges that he helped unleash death and destruction on two U.S. embassies in Africa back in 1998. Now, this was the first trial, or as CBS radio reports it, the opening salvo in Al-Qaeda's campaign to kill Americans, the attack on the U.S. embassy. And, you know, when I saw that written on CBS Radio's website and heard about it on NPR today, the first thought that came to my mind, an opening salvo in Al-Qaeda's campaign to kill Americans. We have been killing civilians with steady regularity for the past 100 years. And everybody from Robert Perry to Mark Twain have written about this slaughter that we have perpetrated against innocent civilians. When was the last time an American was picked up, and an American warmonger or politician or just an American picked up and put on trial for crimes, first of all, held for 6 or 7 years and tortured and then put on trial? When was the last time that happened? I'm not looking for equivalency here between the slaughter and the blood that we've spilled all over the planet and the slaughter and the blood spilled by this imaginary organization called Al-Qaeda. There's enough murder and death and destruction in the 20th century and now in the 21st to cover everybody in all the gore and blood and brain particles and guts that we could possibly want to be covered in to prove that we are capable of slaughtering and being slaughtered. Okay, you get my point. But when is there an equivalent judicial or legal attempt to bring any of us to justice? That's a fair question. If we are invading foreign countries, scooping people up with no evidence in most of these instances other than the claims made by some rogue or renegade CIA operative or the detainees' enemies within the country that we scoop them up, and then we hold them and torture them until we get these so-called confessions? When is an American ever held accountable? Isn't it a fair question? Didn't we set these standards at Nuremberg? The post-World War trials, not just at Nuremberg, but all over Germany, in Japan. Didn't we hang Japanese officers for controlled drowning? And we use these fascist legal experts to give permission to our people to do controlled drowning. I mean, hypocrisy is one thing, but I don't know. It's difficult for me to handle it. So I do, like most people do, I just ignore it. But how can we never see Americans on trial for our campaigns to kill Salvadorans, Mexicans, Guatemalans, Venezuelans, Nicaraguans, Vietnamese, Syrians, Iraqis, Afghans, Pakistanis? Panamanians, Dominicans, Filipinos, Koreans. Oh, well. A federal jury convicted Ahmed Gailani of one count of conspiracy, one count, and acquitted him on all the other counts, including murder and murder conspiracy in the embassy bombings. The federal jury deliberated over 7 days. One juror wrote a note to the judge saying she felt threatened by the other jurors. We don't know if she felt threatened because she was holding out for guilty or holding out for not guilty. We don't know. Now, he still faces a statutory minimum of 20 years in prison, but he could also receive a life sentence, even though he was found guilty of one charge, conspiracy. Justice Department spokesman Matthew Miller said in a written statement, quote, "We respect the jury's verdict and are pleased that Ahmed Gailani now faces a minimum of 20 years in prison and a potential life sentence for his role in the embassy bombings," end quote. Prosecutors had said that he was a cold-blooded terrorist. The defense portrayed him as a clueless errand boy exploited by senior Al-Qaeda operatives and framed by evidence from contaminated crime scenes. Now, this was a trial that occurred in lower Manhattan. CBS radio reporter Irene Cornell says there was a tense atmosphere in the courtroom as the verdict was read. She says you could hear a pin drop in that courtroom. All the prosecutors had come over from the U.S. Attorney's office packing the courtroom, and it seemed they were holding their breath as all those not guilty verdicts were read out. Gailani's prosecution also demonstrated some of the constitutional challenges the government would face if these people are brought to trial. On the eve of the trial last month, the judge, in this case, barred the government from calling a key witness because the witness had been identified while Galiani was being held at a secret CIA camp where he was tortured. After briefly considering an appeal of that ruling, prosecutors just forged ahead with the case that they had put together a decade ago in the prosecution of four other men in the same attacks in Tanzania and Kenya. All of those people were convicted in the same courthouse, Lower Manhattan, and sentenced to life terms. This guy was acquitted, and they're still going to put him in prison for the rest of his life. CBS News analyst, legal analyst, said that Galiani's conviction means the Justice Department doesn't have to resort to its backup plan of detaining him indefinitely if the jury had acquitted him on all counts. That was the plan. If the jury would have found him not guilty, not innocent, but not guilty, the plans of the Eric Holder, Barack Obama Justice Department was to hold him indefinitely. In other words, to urinate all over the criminal justice system, where the Obama administration wants these people to be tried, not in the military justice system, but our criminal justice system. So what the hell's the point? If the backup plan for these people is, if they are found not guilty, hold them indefinitely. What? The jury heard a former al-Qaeda member who has cooperated with the U.S. government describe how bin Laden took the group in a more radical direction, al-Qaeda, with a 1998 fatwa, or religious edict, against Americans. The witness said bin Laden accused the United States of killing innocent men and women and children in the Middle East and decided, quote, we should do the same, end quote. Action, reaction. We'll be right back. Show. This hour is sponsored by George. George writes, I realize you don't have many felines that listen to your show. My mom is writing this because I'm not that skilled at the keyboard. My name is Alex. I'm a Maine Coon cat and listen most of the time. But being a cat, we have very busy lives. I'm an avid bird watcher and a very highly skilled cricket hunter. Also, would you like to know that I'm far more intelligent and a much better Christian than any teabagger? Signed, George. Okay, George is our sponsor for this hour. If you would like to sponsor an hour of the program, like George, go to MikeMalloy.com on the main page, on the toolbar up there where it says sponsor. Click on it. All right, it's time for, do we have time for Prairie 2? When do we break here? Let's try it. Subject, why didn't I think of that? Now, we'll have to do it when we come back because I'm afraid I'll get to the good part and we'll have to go to commercials. Lisa Murkowski has been named the winner in Alaska, which means a right-wing Republican continues as a senator there, and a neo-fascist can go back to doing whatever he does when he's not running for office to which he is unqualified completely. What is interesting is, you know, all this garbage crap. What did I see on ABC tonight? A little tease where Baba Wawa is interviewing Sarah Palin. I don't know when they're going to play this interview. But what they showed was the question that Baba Wawa asks Sarah Palin about whether or not Sarah's going to run for president. And the answer is just, I mean, what in the hell is going on here? Sarah Palin, who is not qualified to mow my goddamn lawn, and somebody as prominent, notice the word, as Baba Wawa is asking Sarah Palin if she's going to run for president. Anyway, Palin made a big deal about endorsing Joe Miller in her home state. Of course, the state she abandoned. She's a quitter. She's caught up in the celebrity that has been showered on her because we have a whorish media in this country. Sarah Palin deserves to be ignored unless it is to appear in a spread in Hustler or Playboy. But Sarah Palin went out of her way to go back to the state that she abandoned and endorse this neo-fascist. And the people of Alaska told her to go pound sand in one of her body orifices. They weren't going for it. As if the people in the state of Florida understand her to a far greater degree than Baba Wawa. So, Lisa Murkowski has done something that hasn't been done since 1954. Strom Thurmond, who ran as a writing candidate on the Dixiecrat ticket. We got to stop those darkies from getting equal rights. Because if they have equal rights, I'll probably have to support this child I fathered by my colored maid. So Strom Thurmond ran as a writing candidate and won. And it hasn't happened since then, until today when the Alaska Board of Elections declared her the winner. Is that what it's getting down to? We either have right-wing Republicans like Lisa Murkowski or neo-fascists like Joe Miller. And I always thought that the battle was between weak-kneed, candy-ass Democrats and totally ignorant, slobbering Republicans. Looks like there's a whole new category here, right? Well, I'll tell you what. The next 2 years is going to be an absolute hoot. Watching the Republicans try to destroy 80 years of building a social safety net in this country. And it's going to be a lot of fun to see who is going to introduce legislation. Which among these cockroaches is going to stand up, well, not stand up, but file legislation, be considered by the House to do all those things these lying cockroaches said they were going to do during the campaign. So that the fools who would vote for the cockroaches actually voted for them. We'll see. We'll see which one of the cockroaches has the courage, if that's what you want to call it, to advocate for the end of social welfare programs, road building, back in the home districts. Oh, you know, all this stuff. I'm going to go down the list. It's going to be fun to see which of the cockroaches will make the first move. Huh? And the cockroaches now are being asked to forego government-sponsored health insurance, i.e. taxpayer-funded health insurance for these cockroaches, since they decided that America shouldn't have it. Why should they, right? We'll be right back.
And I know it can be all of them, and it's just not.
25 before the hour. Uncle Mike made big error. we got it right, except it's not George. I don't know where this name, I've got a piece of paper, the word George on it. Our sponsor this hour is Alex. Alex. I think I said that, but then I went on and said George. Let me give it to you again. Alex sent me an email, more or less. This is what it says. I realize you don't have many felines that listen to your show. My mom is writing this because I'm not that skilled at the keyboard. My name is Alex. My name is Alex. I'm a Maine Coon cat and listen most of the time. But being a cat, we have very busy lives. I'm an avid bird watcher and a very highly skilled cricket hunter. Also, would you like to know that I'm a far more intelligent and a much better Christian than any teabagger? Alex is a sponsor of tonight's Hour 2. Thank you, Alex. If you want to be a sponsor, go to MikeMolloy.com and the toolbar where it says sponsor, click. Okay, Prairie 2. He writes, why didn't I think of that? Consumer prices, excluding food and fuel, were flat for the third straight month. And on a yearly basis, the so-called core inflation fell to 0.6%, and this is the lowest rate since records began in 1957. Indeed, it would be safe to say we haven't seen anything like this since at least 1937. That was the year, the last year, that the Republicans really screwed up the economy by intimidating FDR into briefly curtailing New Deal spending. The New Deal was so successful that it has taken them until now to cripple the economy to the point that we are again on the edge of complete collapse. Republicans have always portrayed FDR's programs as just a welfare state giveaway, counting on the fact that few Americans are concerned with history. In fact, there was so much infrastructure built, so much development done, and so many reforms put in place that you can't find a place to stand in the United States where you can't see the effects. Everything that Americans take for granted as their birthright comes directly from the work done then. Roads, dams, airports, bridges, electricity, safe water, forests, parks, on and on, even things that have been rebuilt, are still built on the foundations laid then, and it would be safe to say would not exist now. The very soil that feeds us was saved by New Deal programs. The Dust Bowl was Republican policy writ large. Desertification of most of the heartland of the United States could easily have come to pass without big government intervention. Congress has finally moved to pass the required legislation when the noonday sun was obscured by a dust cloud over Washington, D.C. The Republicans are at it again with Sarah Palin twittering about monetary policy. The talking point is that gas and food are way up, so the government is lying about inflation. In fact, gas is not up compared to the recent past, and food is up only modestly. They have a lot of nerve anyway, since gas and food are hard for the teabaggers to afford as a result of policies Republicans have been pushing for 30 years. The truth is that what the Fed is doing is not good economic policy, but it's the only oar we have in the water, and they may only be postponing the inevitable by a short time. The reforms necessary are not even being talked about by any serious people. The serious people are all talking about austerity. That would be austerity for you, not for them. Oh, wait. He says we can't do that. Bummer. Erskine Bowles, the nominal Democrat on the Deficit Commission, stated today that we must cut spending as we can't balance the budget just by raising taxes. Erskine said in a TV interview that, quote, we'd have to raise the top marginal tax rate to 80%, end quote. Bingo! That's it! Roll back the Reagan tax cuts. Why didn't I think of that? I guess because I'm not a rich guy working for really rich guys. Rand Paul said something out loud that should clue you in on the new normal. Quote, we all either work for rich people or we sell stuff to rich people. So just punishing rich people is as bad for the economy as punishing anyone. End quote. Lately, he's claimed that there are no rich people or poor people, that we are all interconnected and all are just the same. I think that last one proves he hasn't given up smoking from the Aqua Buddha pipe. Prairie2.com. You want a preview of what's coming? Today, Senate Republicans voted unanimously against legislation to close the pay gap between women and men. The Senate voted against allowing debate on the Paycheck Fairness Act, which would help end discriminatory pay practices against women. This bill had already passed the House, but Senate Republicans, including John Kyle, whose ass is going to rise like a huge dirigible on this program next hour. More than 45 years after passage of the Equal Pay Act, the pay gap shockingly persists, with women still earning on average 77 cents to every man's dollar. According to the National Women's Law Center, quote, this persistent pay gap translates to more than $10,000 in lost wages per year for the average female worker. The gap is even worse for, here's a surprise, women of color. African-American women earn 61 cents and Latinas earn 52 cents for every dollar a white non-Hispanic man earns. Same job, same everything, different pay. This afternoon on MSNBC, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from New York, Democrat, said it was outrageous and egregious that these senators voted against fair play. Women are half of all U.S. workers, and mothers are the primary breadwinners or co-breadwinners in nearly two-thirds of American families. The Paycheck Fairness Act would be critical to strengthening the economic security of these families. You notice how the Republicans always talk about family security? You lying sons of bitches. You care nothing about family security. The bill would have updated the landmark Equal Pay Act of 1963. That's the year JFK was murdered by right-wingers. It would have closed loopholes, strengthened incentives to prevent pay discrimination, and prohibited retaliation against workers who inquire about employers' wage practices or disclose their own wages. The act would also have addressed pay secrecy, which is a prevalent problem prohibiting employees from knowing whether discriminatory practices are occurring. Not a single Republican supported the bill, not even Senator Olympia Snowe or Senator Susan Collins, who both previously had voted in favor of the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, which removed barriers blocking workers from seeking compensation from discriminatory pay practices. At the time, Olympia Snowe said, quote, this new law sends a clear message to the American people that this Congress is committed to these core principles and will continue to work in a bipartisan fashion to break down the barriers of wage discrimination in our nation, end quote, blah, 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 Olympia Snowe. And she turns around today and votes against allowing the bill to even be debated. Senator Ben Nelson, Democrat of Nebraska, his ass again. Why doesn't this freak just join the Republican Party? He voted for the Lilly Ledbetter Act. He was the lone Democrat voting against the bill today. And not surprising, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which has a long record of opposing women's rights, urged Congress to vote against the act. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce also urged Congress to vote against the Lilly Ledbetter Act last year. All of this comes to this program through thinkprogress.org. So you have seen a preview. Republicans think you women are a bunch of idiots. How can any woman in this country vote Republican? In doing so, they are saying, yes, I want my privacy violated by any male who wants to stick his nose into my business, A. B, I want to continue to be discriminated against on the basis of my gender by Republican paymasters. C, I want to be forced, when I am raped, as I will be, I want to be forced to pay for my own rape kits because local police departments are having a bit of a problem with funding because of the Republican tax cuts across the country. Women who vote Republican are chickens voting for Colonel Sanders. I've never understood this. White male Republicans can justify their oppressive support of Republicans. on a number of levels. It maintains the status quo being white male power. But white females voting for Republicans? Women of Hispanic descent, African-American women, voting Republican under any circumstances. What is wrong with you people? Lisa Murkowski was not there to vote. We'll be back in a moment. Stick around. For the hour. From Susan in sunny Squim, Washington. That's a scary, scary sounding name for a city, isn't it? Squim does make me nervous. Anyway, Susan writes, "Hi, Mike, just wanted to say how very much I approve of your plans for a solstice show this year. I've enjoyed your holiday shows in the past with the stories and with Molly and Kathy, too, but I think you are right in feeling it's time now to keep the eggnog while dumping the religion. I really do. Christianity has damaged society so much more than it has helped it, and yet it constantly claims to be the moral arbiter for our culture. Well, I think we should say enough. Religion has always been a highly combustible mix of politics and superstition, but here lately it's really getting out of hand. In its dying throes, Christian mythology is fighting tooth and nail to retain its credibility. It is currently on a high-speed program to invade our government, our schools, our doctor's offices, and even our bedrooms. And all the while it demands a respect it has not earned. There's nothing about this current religious thrust that shows any goodwill toward men. On the contrary, it seems amazingly mean-spirited. As an atheist, I've watched in recent years as the scandals have unfolded, the pedophilia of the priests, the homophobia of the fundamentalists, the racism of some sects, and the sexism of virtually all sects, combined with a total lack of respect for all other religions and not tolerance at all for the non-religious. I have no doubt in my mind that a large part of the zeal on the part of the Bush administration to start those two wars in the Middle East was a hatred of the non-Christian inhabitants due to their faith. Sam Harris has written a new book called The Moral Landscape, in which he proposes that the claim to morality on the part of religion is misplaced, and that morality can and should be measured more scientifically by the well-being of the human condition. It is a wonderful concept, proposing that since morality is a part of the natural world, it too can be measured and described by science. Needless to say, this, combined with some of the descriptions of Islam and Christianity, have made Harris hated by most of the world's religious leaders. Is it any wonder that he has to hire guards to protect himself and his family? At this time of year, when the days are at their shortest, and when the sun is about to turn around and start bringing us back into the light, We all like to think of goodwill toward each other and toward our planet. I think it is very fitting that you have chosen to celebrate this time of year in the way of our ancestors, those who lived so much closer to the earth and who relied on it so much for everything and who were grateful for it. I look forward to a happy Yule season and in spending part of solstice with the Malloy Show radio family. Many thanks, Susan. All in response to what I had said on the air a couple of nights ago, that after a number of years in sequence, probably since we were in Chicago, right, Kathy? 97. So for the past 13 years, I think we've been on the air every Christmas. We had a long period of unemployment before we went to work for Air America, but we've always done a Christmas show. And I've never put a disclaimer that I was doing this as a tip of the hat to cultural norms or cultural expectations in the United States. And I've just decided that my hypocrisy around that issue is starting to make me sick. So what we're going to do, I think we're going to be on the air December 23rd. Is that right, Kathy? December 20th, the night before Christmas. And December 23rd is just a day or two after the winter solstice. So we are going to have a celebration of the winter solstice this year. Molly will probably still join me to read The Night Before Christmas, because that to me is very secular, isn't it? I realize. Don't send me emails and tell me all about Saint Nicholas and being a Catholic creation. I understand. But still, who wrote that? What was his name? Clement Moore. I thought that was the guy that played the Lone Ranger on radio. Anyway, we're going to do The Night Before Christmas. And I think this year, Molly will read it. We have explained to her, she knows that Santa Claus is myth, but it's a happy myth. She understands, although she's having a bit of a conflict, and not really a conflict, she's just processing mine and Kathy's non-acceptance of some cloud being. And I think she's come along fine. I think she's starting to realize that any higher power that exists in the universe is the same higher power that exists in every one of the atoms that make up her body, because we're all star children. You do know that. Matter nor energy can be neither created nor destroyed, so everything that we are has always been and always will be. There's your concept of God, if you want it. At least that's what we try to tell Molly. She's only six, you know, what do you expect? So that's what we're going to do. A winter solstice program. Kind of the old Celtic or... be a little bit of Wicca in there, maybe some ancient African tradition. We'll put it all together and present it to you. You can accept or reject. All right, third hour coming up. Stick around. John Kyle. John Kyle's ass is going to rise over this program like a huge dirigible. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. is 7 past the hour. And this hour is being sponsored by Jude Morford, or Judy Morford, however you want to say it. She is the founder of Women Standing. If you want to know what that organization is, go to their website, womenstanding.com. Womenstanding.com. So this hour is sponsored by Judy Morford. Thanks. If you want to know what we're doing with these sponsorships, go to MikeMalloy.com, and on the main page there, on the toolbar across the top, you'll see Sponsor. Click it, and behold. This morning, I had another one of those choke on my coffee moments. Sitting there while Molly's having breakfast, and I'm going through the New York Times. I have found that it's not good to start on the editorial page of the New York Times or the op-ed page. Just not good. Not that early in the morning. And trust me, for me, it's early in the morning. 6 a.m. is rise and shine time around the Malloy compound. But this morning, I'm reading on the front page of the Times. GOP opposition dims hope for arms treaty with Russia. So I'm reading the article, and I can't help but look at Molly while she's trying to build little castles in her bowl with oatmeal and raisins and 2% milk, and trying to figure out a way to avoid eating the toast I've made for her. We have a good time in the morning, Molly and I. And but I'm looking at her, and I'm reading this article, and I'm thinking, I wonder if my mother, all those years ago, used to look across the breakfast table at me, because she had the full realization that we had entered into the nuclear era. And she had the full realization that because of the nature of capitalism and communism, there was a global conflict unfolding. It was not that long after the end of World War II when, for a brief period of time, the capitalists and the communists were allies against the fascists. Germans.
More flying monkey free fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. John Kyle, Senator from Arizona, the junior senator. You know, the big-ass war hero being the senior senator from Arizona, John McCain. Anyway, Kyle has decided he is not going to support this treaty after assuring the White House that he would do so. It's referred to as the New START Treaty, S-T-A-R-T, Strategic Yada, 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 yada. The purpose of it is to cut back on the nuclear arsenals that both the United States and Russia still maintain. Thousands of nuclear warheads, any 20 of which could eliminate life on Earth as we know it. It would resume mutual inspections that ended last year for the first time since the Cold War ended. And here is the reason John Kyle opposes it, why John Kyle is raising his mighty ass for the world to see. This treaty is the centerpiece of two of Barack Obama's signature goals. First, restoring friendly relations with Russia, and putting the world on a path toward eventually eliminating nuclear weapons. Now, that seems very last century, doesn't it? I don't know how many of you folks are old enough to remember the nuclear freeze movement. I have a daughter who is now in her early 40s. When she was a baby, practically a newborn, her mother and I used to stand in a park in Richmond, Virginia, near the Richmond Professional Institute that no longer exists. It's been absorbed by the University of Virginia, I believe. And we used to stand there on Sunday afternoons handing out balloons that we inflated from a little tank of helium that was given to us by a Ban the Bomb activist. And the balloon said, "Ban the Bomb." And we would stand there and hand the balloons out to other young couples who would pass by with their babies in strollers. No pamphlets, no speeches, just a balloon. So here we are, 45 years later. And John Kyle, a senator from Arizona, raises his mighty ass in the air and says, "I will not participate!" To the extent that he will do what he can to stop the ratification of this treaty. And all it takes is one Republican raising his mighty ass in the air to stop it. Well, the ass-raising task was handed off to John Kyle. A failure to ratify this treaty could freeze both efforts of Obama, restoring friendly relations with the Russians, which maybe is not a good idea, and putting the world on a path toward eventually eliminating nuclear weapons. I don't think there's any question about that. But the more important thing is, The failure to ratify the treaty will undermine Obama's credibility on the world stage. Remember what the goal is of the Republican Party: to destroy any chance that Barack Obama might have for re-election, no matter the cost. If it means continuing nuclear proliferation, if it means continuing to hold over the head of every man, woman, and child on earth the potential of nuclear death, it doesn't matter to these mighty-assed Republicans. Stop Obama, no matter what. Joe Biden said failure to pass this new treaty this year would endanger our national security. It would mean, among other things, no verification regime to track Russia's strategic nuclear arsenal. Biden also said, given this treaty's bipartisan support and enormous importance to our national security, the time to act is now, and we'll continue to seek its approval by the Senate before the end of the year. End quote, Joe Biden. Joe knows there are two chances of that happening, slim and none. Both parties in this dead and stinking legislative branch of government had considered John Kyle the make-or-break voice on this agreement. Senate Republicans had essentially given him the assignment to work out a deal that would secure tens of billions of dollars to modernize the nation's nuclear weapons complex in exchange for approval of the treaty. What does that mean, modernize the nation's nuclear weapons complex? It means further nuclear testing. It means a revitalization of the nuclear weapons industry. And that was on the table. The Obama administration said, okay, we'll give you the money to do that. Just ratify the treaty. And John Kyle had said over months that he would do it. But now, it is more important to Kyle to raise his mighty, naked, hairy ass for the world to see and say, "No, I'm not going to do it." Back in the USSR.
He watches C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's More Mike Malone.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there.
25 before the hour, this hour of the Malone program is sponsored by Judy Morford, WomenStanding.com. It's her organization. If you have not been to the website and you wonder what Women Standing is all about, check it out. Judy Morford is this hour's sponsor of the Mike Malloy program. All right. John Kyle, junior senator from Arizona, says no to a new nuclear nonproliferation and arms control treaty with the Russians. And what Kyle is saying is, well, there's not enough time left in the lame duck Congress to look at all the intricacies and all the little aspects of this treaty. That is a filthy Republican, John Kyle's naked ass lie. Here's why. There have been, according to the people who have kept track of this, 29 meetings, phone calls, briefings, letters involving John Kyle and his staff about this issue. The White House says they thought they had given him everything he wanted. Everything he wanted. Not the human race, not the American public. No, everything John Kyle's mighty ass wanted. And they were optimistic about completing a deal this week, only to learn about this decision yesterday from reporters. Reporters. And Kyle, again, Kyle said he didn't think there was enough time to resolve all the issues during the lame duck session that opens this week. Aha, yeah, ha, 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 ha. Kyle declined a request by the New York Times to be interviewed about this, asked if the senator's statement was meant to close the door to a vote. His spokesman, Ryan Patmintra, said, correct! So there you have it. Since a treaty like this requires a two-thirds vote of the Senate, the Obama administration needs at least 8 Republicans in the departing Senate and thought it had a dozen ready to vote yes if John Kyle's mighty ass agreed. But without John Kyle's mighty Republican ass, the Republican support has begun melting away. Senator Bob Corker, for example, of Tennessee, who voted for the treaty in committee, said yesterday, well, I don't know. I question whether it's even practical for the administration to rush passage of the START treaty during this lame duck session. Rush? This thing has been debated, talked about for years. Rush? on the other side of this issue, the Russians, the Russian government did not respond to this particular development, the development of on the horizon, what they thought at first was a huge moon rising, but it turned out to be John Kyle's naked Republican ass. They didn't respond to this, but Russian officials have expressed fear that Republican victories in these midterm elections would damage relations between the two countries. Why, of course, that's what it's supposed to do. That's the reason "under God" was added to the Pledge of Allegiance back in the 1950s, was to slam the godless commies. But they're not communists anymore, Mr. Mighty Ass Senator Kyle. They are not commies. As a matter of fact, they're Christian. They're Christian capitalists. They're oligarchs. They do what you would like to do, Mr. Kyle, when you are given opposition by a journalist. They wait in the bushes for the journalists and then beat him within an inch of his life, or disappear him, or murder him. Wouldn't that be wonderful, Mr. Kyle, if you had the same privilege? Huh? But short of that, you raise your mighty ass in the face of people who are trying to end nuclear proliferation on this planet. And you'll have none of that, will you, Mr. Kyle? None of that. The chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee in Russia, Konstantin Kosachev, said yesterday, according to the Russian news media, quote, "The problem is not that the document, the treaty, is bad. We are confronting the fact that Republicans refuse to ratify the treaty," end quote. And because, of course, Kyle waited with his mighty ass until Obama had assured Russian President Dmitry Medvedev during a meeting just 2 days earlier that winning approval of the treaty was his, Obama's, top priority in foreign affairs for the lame duck session. Now, the fact that John Kyle's mighty ass has now gotten in the way, there is the possibility, and this was part of the horrible, hideous, horrendous game played by the Russians, the Soviets, and the Americans for half of the 20th century, and that is that Kyle's mighty ass getting in the way may embolden the hardliners in Moscow who have been skeptical of this so-called effort to reset the relationship between the United States and Russia. They have mighty asses in Russia, too. None so mighty as John Kyle's, though. John Kyle's ass is huge and will be acknowledged and respected and kissed. Now, I think it doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand that if this treaty is not ratified in this session, if it carries over into the next session, the one that will be the legislative session wherein the zombies, the cockroaches, have retaken control of the dying American empire, this treaty will never be ratified. You know that, and I know it. So just so you know, the treaty would restore mutual inspections and prohibit both countries from deploying more than 1,550 strategic warheads and 700 launchers each. Jesus H. Holy Christ. 1,550 strategic nuclear weapons. Strategic, not tactical. Strategic. The big ones! Each. 3,100 nuclear warheads will be allowed by this treaty. How many of these nuclear warheads would it take to end permanently all life on this earth, except some of the more evolved vermin? 100? 150? The treaty allows the existence of 3,100 nuclear warheads. Now, the Obama negotiators had hoped to follow up this treaty with another more ambitious one to reduce tactical nuclear weapons and stored strategic weapons. And according to the Times, it also hoped to follow up by reviving the never ratified by the United States Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. And it also, the Obama administration, the negotiators, envisioned negotiating another new treaty that would cut off new production of fissile material. Not going to happen. And it's not going to happen because from out of the deserts of Arizona to a thunderous sunrise of the new Republican era, – comes the appearance and the stench of John Kyle's mighty ass rising like a bad moon. No, there will be no treaty, because I say no. And in case you don't understand, my ass fully consents to my saying no. The people on this planet can line up and kiss it, but there will be no comprehensive treaty at all. Not now, not next month, not around the Christmas holidays celebrating the birth of my precious Savior, Jesus H. Christ. Not ever. Ever. Before the hour, and once again, this hour has been sponsored and brought to you by Judy Morford and her organization, Women Standing. Go to the website, womenstanding.com. And if you would like to sponsor an hour of the Malloy program, go to MikeMalloy.com, and on the toolbar across the top, click on Sponsor. I need something to purge myself from the image of John Kyle's enormous Republican ass floating up over the deserts of Arizona. So let me do an email I got from Bob Alexander. It's not one of our infamous moments with Bob. It's just an email. He writes, George Carlin said they were going to come after our Social Security, and they were going to get it. Bob goes on, you know those infomercials a couple of years ago about how you could get rich flipping houses if you bought the secrets on how to flip houses from Mr. Millionaire House Flipper? Remember that? Then you too can get rich. Huh? Those you too can get rich infomercials are made by guys who got rich doing whatever scummy thing they did to rake in the dough. When they sucked up just about all the money they could, they made an infomercial to sell their secret. The secret was that they'd already made all the money, and the last bit of money they could make was from selling their secret to greedy, dumb people. They mopped up the last bit of cash available from suckers who didn't know the window of opportunity had closed the minute the infomercials aired. It's the last act of the capitalism show. The U.S. corporatocracy roamed the planet for 100 years, sucking up cheap resources, and made gabillions selling the crap they made to us. Globalization meant they could uproot themselves from American soil and drift over to whatever country they wanted to serve up their people as cheap labor. We lost millions of jobs, but so what? Americans might not be able to buy as much crap like they used to, but there are millions of other people around the world lining up to buy crap. Who needs Americans? So, what to do with your old customers? gouge them as much as you can and mop up the last pools of money. Keep their pensions. Steal their pensions. Delay handing over their pensions. Wait for them to die so they can't get their pensions and, well, you get the idea. Suck the last drop of blood out of the people and move on to the next warm body. It's the last act of the capitalism show. Americans were relatively safe when the corporatocracy ran roughshod over the planet. Now the monsters turn their rheumy eyes back and look at us with dripping jaws. What sort of monsters are they? Really, really scary monsters. Bob. I get the feeling that I should sit down and have a cup of coffee with Bob. Well, can't get over that picture of Dick Cheney at the groundbreaking ceremony for George W. Bush's library. There was a picture circulating through the news holes. Sitting on the stage in the picture I saw was George W. Bush and poor Laura. Long-suffering Laura Bush. Condoleezza Rice was there. And Dick Cheney. And the picture I saw was Cheney at a makeshift podium where he was holding on for dear life. News reports say he was using canes, or was it a walker? Or was it bags stuffed with bloodless babies? I have no idea. But you talk about someone who looks like they have been to the other side and have come back to report. It would be Dick Cheney. Calling him gaunt would be like calling the people of Haiti unfortunate. There he stood. And, you know, as I looked at that picture, I just thought, you know, all of the smart-ass comments I've made over the years about this ghoul, well, not literally true, may have taken a turn and have become literally true. You know, my comments over the years of Dick Cheney's thirst for blood was a metaphor for his determination to kill as many people on earth as he possibly could. Dick Cheney's life has been dedicated to death. I think the only regret he has is that he was not young enough, old enough to have been in the Nazi high command. But perhaps all those smart-ass comments I made about him over the years were essentially true. Literally true. Of course they were essentially true, but literally true. That now that this man's blood supply has been cut off, he's starting to fade away. He's starting to disappear. And the world will be a better place when you finally hear that. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.